The Lord be with you. You're listening to a podcast from the teaching ministry of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community. For more multimedia content or to get more information, go to www.epiclesis.org. Now, here's Pastor Chris.
Hi, folks, and welcome back to another sermon from Epiclesis, an ancient future faith church in Sacramento, California. Through his two terms as president, when difficult situations came up, Ronald Reagan would tell one particular story. And Jay Dudley told us about this, and he said the point of the story was this: real treasure is buried in this mess if we are willing to dig to find it. This sermon by Jay uses Reagan's story as an analogy that helps us dig for and find the treasure buried within a mystifying exchange between Jesus and a Canaanite woman whose daughter was demon-possessed. I'm grateful to Jay for filling in for me that day, and his sermon is titled, "There Must Be a Pony in Here Somewhere." Now, here's Dr. Jay Dudley.
The passage this morning is Matthew 15. And in particular, verses 21 to 28. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not say a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me." He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." "Yes, Lord," she said, "but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." And then he answered, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed from that very hour. Are you aghast? Are you taken aback? Are you a little shaken from that encounter? What do we do with this? How do we handle it? Because Jesus is acting in a way that, wow. I was wrestling with this for quite a while now. And recently I was walking and a story occurred to me. Ronald Reagan, President Ronald Reagan, used to tell this story whenever things got tense and kind of unmanageable. He told this joke. There were twin boys, 5 or 6 years old. The parents were concerned because the boys were developing extreme personality traits. One was extremely pessimistic, and the other was unaccountably optimistic, just way out there. So the parents took the boys to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist began with the pessimist kid. And in order to try to cheer him up, he introduced him to a whole room full of toys and said to the kid, he goes, "There you go, man, have at it. You can play with all these toys." And the kid burst out crying. The psychiatrist said, "What's the matter?" "Because, yeah, I can play with all these toys, but I'd break every one of them." The psychiatrist threw up his hands, decided to take some time away from this, and moved toward the optimist kid, and thought he would dampen his spirits a little bit by, well, what he did was he introduced him to a room full of manure. And the kid yelped out, "Yay!" And he climbed to the top and started digging with his bare hands. And the psychiatrist said, what are you doing? He said, "Well, with all this manure, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere." Now, don't take the analogy literally. I'm not saying that Matthew's story is, well, you know, I wasn't even sure I should say the word manure in church, but really, honestly, this account is kind of yucky, I mean, if you wanted to introduce a new friend to Jesus, you wouldn't turn to this passage. And if we're talking to each other about how we need to be Christ-like, this isn't what we're talking about. So let's be optimists, and let's dig around in this account and see what turns up. Let's begin with the questions that naturally arise, such as, Jesus, is that really you? Really? Man, you are tough on her. And why was this mother so sure that her daughter was inhabited by an alien personality? What were the symptoms? Was it in her eyes? Did she look like a wolf? Was it in her voice that clearly wasn't her own natural voice? Was it in her agitated behavior? We don't know. We're left to wonder. Another question, how did she know about Jesus at all? I mean, they're miles and miles and miles and miles apart. And how did she know? Who told her that he was right there in her neighborhood? How did the Canaanite, the pagan, how did she know to call him Son of David? And we have minutes to explore what could properly take hours. So let's keep digging a little more widely. And what comes up is parallels. You'll remember the woman with internal bleeding. You remember what she wanted to do? She wanted to get close to Jesus, but what did she want to do? What did she think was enough? To touch just the hem of his garment. That just that little bit would be enough. She knew it. And then there's the centurion in Matthew chapter 8. I want to read this whole passage because it's so, for at least part of it. The centurion is a Roman military officer with at least 100 men under him. And he has a servant who is not well, very, very sick. And here's the story. When Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him. So he's a Roman. He's not a Jew. He's not an Israelite. Centurion came to him asking him for help. Lord, he said, my servant lies at home, paralyzed and in terrible suffering. And Jesus said to him, I will go and heal him. The servant replied, Lord, I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. But just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. And when Jesus heard this, he was astonished and said to those following him, I tell you the truth, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. And then just skipping a couple of verses. Then Jesus said to the centurion, go, it will be done just as you believed it would. And his servant was healed in that very hour. You don't even have to come. Just say the word. You're a man. I'm a man under authority. I get it. The woman who needed, wanted to touch his garment, the centurion who just said, just say the word. These people all have this intuitive, like an insider understanding of who Jesus is and what he's capable of. And it's just amazing. And the big parallel, really, is John chapter 2 and the wedding at Cana. And that's what that little chart in your worship folder is about. We'll just follow it briefly. You're aware of the situation. John chapter 2, they're at a wedding, and the wine is given out, and Mary is concerned, and she approaches Jesus about this. So, in both of these incidents, the wedding and the Matthew 15 demoniac daughter, you have a knowing beforehand. The mother, in both cases, knows, has this sense beforehand that, Jesus is the answer to this problem. And there's this, there's the compelling need. In John, it's the wine's gone out. In Matthew, it's the this demonized daughter. And then there's the approach and request. In John, Mary comes to Jesus and says they've run out of wine, and there's this tete-a-tete between the two of them. In Matthew 15, it's a little more complicated. The exchange goes back and forth a couple of times. And then there's the apparent rebuff to Mary. What Jesus says to her is, it's an idiomatic expression. It's what you mean. How are we connected? It's a shocking kind of disassociation. Like, what are you talking to me for? And obviously, the connection is deep and intimate, and it's an interesting dialogue between the two of them. So anyway, there's an apparent rebuff. And then a confident response on the part of Mary. She just says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. She knew. And in the part of the mother with the demonized daughter, she just keeps coming back. She just keeps coming back. She's confident. And she makes this tremendous comment about the crumbs. All I need is a crumb, essentially, is what she's saying. A little bit of your power will do it. Ah. And then comes the unprecedented miracle in both parts. You have this, in John chapter 2, this incredible, how many tanks of wine did Jesus produce? Like 9, I think, yeah. And it's unprecedented, never been done before, never happened before. And in Matthew, the demonized daughter, what you have is, of course, he dismisses the demon from a great distance. We don't even know how far the distance was. Earlier, he had dismissed and healed the centurion servant from a distance, but this is demon possession from a distance, and it's staggering. So it's just a fascinating parallel passage. And if we keep digging, in addition to the questions and the parallels, we find some certainties. Number one, this event, we're back to Matthew 15 now, the demonized daughter. This event really happened. This story is a presence. It is a persistent presence in the Gospels. John does not include it. But Matthew, Mark, and Luke do. With Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it made the cut. The church has had the opportunity, well, they did early on for a long time, they had the opportunity to excise this whole shocking incident in which Jesus appears to be someone that we don't quite recognize. But they didn't. The church left it there. And you know what? When I discovered this passage in the lectionary, when the pastor asked me to preach this Sunday, I thought, I can't believe it's there. I can't believe those lectionary guys even admitted it was there. There it is. Why would they perpetuate an uncomfortable incident if it didn't really happen? Why would they perpetuate an uncomfortable incident even though it really did happen? Because there's a pony in here somewhere. Certainty number two. Jesus has immense willpower. And I don't mean willpower in the typical sense. I don't mean he can do anything he sets his mind to. Well, yeah, I guess I kind of do mean that. Anyway, but just think about this. Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And she walks home and finds the daughter just fine. And Jesus does that from a distance across. I am dumbfounded by that. I'm just so striking. Especially when you combine it with Mark's report, which includes a slightly different detail. In Mark 7:30, he says, she went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. And Jesus has never talked to the demon. He willed it. It defies description. But Jesus, the power of Jesus' will to get it done is incredibly fantastic, immense. And the third certainty is this. In The Lion and the Witch and the Wardrobe, the first of C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, Mr. Beaver tells the concerned children, because they're getting concerned about Aslan. They're getting a little worried about him because they don't quite know who he is. And Mr. Beaver tells the children, he's not a tame lion. And Susan then asks, then isn't he safe? And Mr. Beaver replies, safe? Who said anything about safe? Of course he's safe. Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. Clearly, the inspiration for the character Aslan is Jesus, who is, and as we have been seeing in this passage, is not a tame lion. That is for sure. So we're keep digging. No pony yet. But the passage provokes these lingering questions. It connects to fascinating parallels. It radiates mysterious certainties. And taken together, the whole report presents significant challenges to our faith in him and our relationship to him, even this morning. With no newspaper, no radio, no TV, no social media, this woman's faith formed to unyielding firmness. It occurred largely because people told their stories. What had happened to them because of Jesus, or what happened to somebody they knew because of Jesus. You see, Jesus was a sensation. And you think about the lack of media, except for the human voice that was operational during that time. It's astounding. But the word got out, and it got out, and it got farther, and it went. And people were talking about Jesus and what he did and what he's done and what he did for me. And that's how her faith ignited. She knew with astonishing and relentless certainty. So the first challenge is this. Do you have a story about what Jesus has done for you, or someone dear to you or close to you? Then tell it. Tell it. What have we got to lose telling our stories about what Christ has done for us? And perhaps more importantly, what do they have to gain by hearing those stories? Just one person telling another. The second challenge is this. What did this woman grasp about Jesus that I don't get yet? She She was something. She was a force to be reckoned with. She wouldn't take no for an answer. She just kept coming at him because she knew, well, because she loved her daughter. And she knew he could, she knew he was the answer. How did she know that? She did know, clearly. So does she have a firmer grasp of Jesus than we do? In some ways, yes. That's really something to work on. Thirdly, she went through the torment of an invaded daughter, a demonized girl in her house, in her home. The exhaustion of the predictable unpredictability of what that demon was going to do and when and how often. The torment, the exhaustion, and the desperation of helplessness. She could do nothing. She was powerless. And then she goes to Jesus and runs smack into him. Oh, man. I don't. Smack it. Was it a brick wall? No. Sure looked like it there for a minute. But she's got all this trouble, and she comes to Jesus, and he was another challenge altogether. My Chris, and I have to say my Chris because there's so many Chris's around here that I have to designate. But my Chris and I were talking about all this a few days ago, and she said, Jesus made her faith shine. Man, yes, he did. And Jesus gave her all the credit. Woman, you have great faith. It's done. So here's the third challenge. No matter how it looks or feels circumstantially, no matter how he looks or feels, can you trust Jesus? Because he really can be trusted. I think we just found the pony.
You've been listening to a podcast from Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith community. If you'd like to learn more about Ancient Future Faith or worship at Epiclesis, visit us on the web at www.epiclesis.org. The Lord be with you.